The Great Chapter, Part 1, translated by Bhikkhu Sujato. Wissona. So I have heard. At one time the Buddha was staying near Rajagaha on the Vulture's Peak Mountain. Now at that time Venerable Sona was staying near Rajagaha in the Cool Grove. Then, as he was in private retreat, this thought came to his mind. I am one of the Buddha's most energetic disciples, yet my mind is not freed from the defilements by not grasping. But my family has wealth. I can enjoy that wealth and make merit. Why don't I resign the training and return to a lesser life so I can enjoy my wealth and make merit? Then the Buddha knew what Venerable Sona was thinking. As easily as a strong person would extend or contract their arm, he vanished from the Vulture's Peak and reappeared in the Cool Grove in front of Sona and sat on the seat spread out. Sona bowed to the Buddha and sat down to one side. The Buddha said to him, "Sona, as you were in private retreat, didn't this thought come to your mind, 'I am one of the Buddha's most energetic disciples,' yet my mind is not freed from defilements by not grasping. But my family has wealth. I can enjoy that wealth and make merit. Why don't I resign the training and return to a lesser life so I can enjoy my wealth and make merit?" "Yes, sir." "What do you think, Sona? When you were still a layman, weren't you a good player of the arched harp?" "Yes, sir." "When your harp strings were tuned too tight, was it resonant and playable?" "No, sir." "When your harp strings were tuned too slack, was it resonant and playable?" "No, sir." "But when your harp strings were tuned neither too tight nor too slack, but fixed at an even tension, was it resonant and playable?" "Yes, sir." "In the same way, Sona, when energy is too forceful, it leads to restlessness. When energy is too slack, it leads to laziness. So, Sona, you should apply yourself to energy and serenity, find a balance of the faculties, and learn the pattern of this situation." "Yes, sir," Sona replied. After advising Sona like this, the Buddha, as easily as a strong person would extend or contract their arm, vanished from the Cool Grove and reappeared on the Vulture's Peak. After some time, Sona applied himself to energy and serenity, found a balance of the faculties, and learned the pattern of this situation. Then Sona, living alone, withdrawn, diligent, keen, and resolute, soon realized the supreme culmination of the spiritual path in this very life. He lived, having achieved with his own insight, the goal for which gentlemen rightly go forth, from the lay life to homelessness. He understood, rebirth is ended, the spiritual journey has been completed, what had to be done has been done, there is no return to any state of existence. And Venerable Sona became one of the perfected. Then, when Sona had attained perfection, he thought, "Why don't I go to the Buddha and declare my enlightenment in his presence?" Then Sona went up to the Buddha, bowed, sat down to one side and said to him, "Sir, a mendicant who is perfected, with defilements ended, who has completed the spiritual journey, done what had to be done, laid down the burden, achieved their own true goal, utterly ended the fetters of rebirth, and is rightly freed through enlightenment, is dedicated to 6 things. They are dedicated to renunciation, seclusion, kindness, the ending of craving, the ending of grasping, and mental clarity. It may be, sir, that one of the venerables here thinks, 'Maybe this venerable is dedicated to renunciation solely out of mere faith.' But it should not be seen like this. A mendicant with defilements ended does not see in themselves anything more to do or anything that needs improvement. They're dedicated to renunciation because they're freed of greed, hate, and delusion, with the end of greed, hate, and delusion. It may be, sir, that one of the venerables here thinks, maybe this venerable is dedicated to seclusion because they enjoy possessions, honour, and popularity. But it should not be seen like this. A mendicant with defilements ended does not see in themselves anything more to do or anything that needs improvement. They're dedicated to seclusion because they're free of greed, hate, and delusion, with the end of greed, hate, and delusion. It may be, sir, that one of the venerables here thinks, maybe this venerable is dedicated to kindness because they believe that adhering to precepts and observances is the most important thing. But it should not be seen like this. A mendicant with defilements ended does not see in themselves anything more to do or anything that needs improvement. They're dedicated to kindness because they are freed of greed, hate, and delusion, with the end of greed, hate, and delusion. They're dedicated to the ending of craving because they're free of greed, hate, and delusion, with the end of greed, hate, and delusion. They're dedicated to the ending of grasping because they're free of greed, hate, and delusion, with the end of greed, hate, and delusion. They're dedicated to clarity of mind because they're free of greed, hate, and delusion, with the end of greed, hate, and delusion. When a mendicant's mind is rightly freed like this, even if compelling sights come into the range of vision, they don't overcome their mind. The mind remains unaffected. It is steady, imperturbable, observing disappearance. Even if compelling sounds, smells, tastes, touches, and thoughts come into the range of the mind, they don't overcome the mind. The mind remains unaffected. It is steady, imperturbable, observing disappearance. Suppose there was a mountain that was one solid mass of rock, without cracks or holes. Even if violent storms were to blow up out of the east, the west, the north, and the south, they couldn't make it shake or rock or tremble. In the same way, when a mendicant's mind is rightly freed like this, even if compelling sights come into range of vision, they don't overcome their mind. The mind remains unaffected. It is steady, imperturbable, observing disappearance. Even if compelling sounds, smells, tastes, touches, and thoughts come into the range of the mind, they don't overcome the mind. The mind remains unaffected. It is steady, imperturbable, observing disappearance. When you're dedicated to renunciation and seclusion of the heart, when you're dedicated to kindness and the end of grasping, when you're dedicated to the ending of craving and clarity of heart, and you've seen the arising of the senses, your mind is rightly freed. For that one, rightly freed, a mendicant with peaceful mind, there's nothing to be improved, and nothing more to do. As the wind cannot stir a solid mass of rock, so too sights, tastes, sounds, smells, touches, and thoughts, whether liked or disliked, don't disturb the poised one. Their mind is steady and free as they observe disappearance. With Pakuna. Now at that time, Venerable Pakuna was sick, suffering, gravely ill. Then Venerable Ananda went up to the Buddha, bowed, sat down to one side and said to him, "Sir, Venerable Pakuna is sick. Sir, please go to Venerable Pakuna out of compassion." The Buddha consented with silence. Then in the late afternoon, the Buddha came out of retreat and went to Venerable Pakuna. Venerable Pakuna saw the Buddha coming off in the distance and tried to rise on his cot. The Buddha said to him, "It's all right, Pakuna, don't get up. There are some seats spread out by others. I will sit there." He sat on the seat spread out and said to Venerable Pakuna, "I hope you're keeping well, Pakuna. I hope you're all right. And I hope the pain is fading, not growing, that its fading is evident, not its growing." "Sir, I'm not keeping well. I'm not all right. The pain is terrible and growing, not fading. Its growing is evident, not its fading. The winds piercing my head are so severe, it feels like a strong man drilling into my head with a sharp point. I'm not keeping well. The pain in my head is so severe, it feels like a strong man tightening a tough leather strap around my head. I'm not keeping well. The winds slicing my belly are so severe, like a deft butcher or their apprentice were slicing open a cow's belly with a meat cleaver. I'm not keeping well. The burning in my body is so severe, it feels like two strong men grabbing a weaker man by the arms to burn and scorch him on a pit of glowing coals. I'm not keeping well. I'm not all right. The pain is terrible and growing, not fading. Its growing is evident, not its fading. Then the Buddha educated, encouraged, fired up and inspired Venerable Paguna with a Dhamma talk, after which he got up from his seat and left. Not long after the Buddha left, Venerable Paguna passed away. At the time of his death, his faculties were bright and clear. Then Venerable Ananda went up to the Buddha, bowed, sat down to one side and said to him, "Sir, soon after the Buddha left, Venerable Paguna died. At the time of his death, his faculties were bright and clear." And why shouldn't his faculties be bright and clear? The mendicant Paguna's mind was not freed from the five lower fetters, but when he heard that teaching, his mind was freed from them. Ananda, there are these six benefits to hearing the teaching at the right time and examining the meaning at the right time. What six? Firstly, take the case of a mendicant whose mind is not freed from the five lower fetters. At the time of death, they get to see the Realized One. The Realized One teaches them Dhamma that's good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, meaningful and well-phrased. And he reveals a spiritual practice that's entirely full and pure. When they hear that teaching, their mind is freed from the five lower fetters. This is the first benefit of listening to the teaching. Next, take the case of another mendicant whose mind is not freed from the five lower fetters. At the time of death, they don't get to see the Realized One, but they get to see a Realized One's disciple. The Realized One's disciple teaches them Dhamma. When they hear that teaching, their mind is freed from the five lower fetters. This is the second benefit of listening to the teaching. Next, take the case of another mendicant whose mind is not freed from the five lower fetters. At the time of death, they don't get to see the Realized One or to see a Realized One's disciple. But they think about and consider the teaching in their heart, examining it with the mind as they learned and memorized it. As they do so, their mind is freed from the five lower fetters. This is the third benefit of listening to the teaching. Next, take the case of a mendicant whose mind is freed from the five lower fetters, but not with the supreme ending of attachments. At the time of death, they get to see the Realized One. The Realized One teaches them Dhamma. When they hear that teaching, their mind is freed with the supreme ending of attachments. This is the fourth benefit of listening to the teaching. Next, take the case of another mendicant whose mind is freed from the five lower fetters, but not with the supreme ending of attachments. At the time of death, they don't get to see the Realized One, but they get to see a Realized One's disciple. The Realized One's disciple teaches them Dhamma. When they hear that teaching, their mind is freed with the supreme ending of attachments. This is the fifth benefit of listening to the teaching. Next, take the case of another mendicant whose mind is freed from the five lower fetters, but not with the supreme ending of attachments. At the time of death, they don't get to see the Realized One or to see a Realized One's disciple. But they think about and consider the teaching in their heart, examining it with the mind as they learned and memorized it. As they do so, their mind is freed with the supreme ending of attachments. This is the sixth benefit of listening to the teaching. These are the six benefits to hearing the teaching at the right time and examining the meaning at the right time. The six classes of rebirth. At one time, the Buddha was staying near Rajagaha on the Vulture's Peak mountain. Then Venerable Ananda went up to the Buddha, bowed, sat down to one side and said to him, "Sir, Purana Kassapa describes six classes of rebirth, black, blue, red, yellow, white, and ultimate white. The black class of rebirth consists of slaughterers of sheep, pigs, poultry, or deer, hunters or fishers, bandits, executioners, butchers of cattle, jailers, and any others with a cruel livelihood. The blue class of rebirth consists of mendicants who live on thorns and any others who teach the efficacy of deeds and action. The red class of rebirth consists of the Jain ascetics who wear one cloth. The yellow class of rebirth consists of the lay people dressed in white who are disciples of the naked ascetics. The white class of rebirth consists of male and female Arjivaka ascetics. And the ultimate white class of rebirth consists of Nandavacha, Kisa Sankicha, and the bamboo-staffed ascetic Gosala. These are the six classes of rebirth that Purana Kassapa describes." "But Ananda, did the whole world authorize Purana Kassapa to describe these six classes of rebirth?"
"No, sir.
It's as if they were to force a stake on a poor, penniless person, telling them they must eat it and then pay for it. In the same way, Purana Kassapa has described these six classes of rebirth without the consent of those ascetics and Brahmins. And he has done so in a foolish, incompetent, unskilled way, lacking common sense. I, however, also describe six classes of rebirth. Listen and apply your mind well. I will speak."
"Yes, sir," Ananda replied. The Buddha said this.
"And what, Ananda, are the six classes of rebirth? Someone born into a dark class gives rise to a dark result. Someone born into a dark class gives rise to a bright result. Someone born into a dark class gives rise to extinguishment, which is neither dark nor bright. Someone born into a bright class gives rise to a dark result. Someone born into a bright class gives rise to a bright result. Someone born into a bright class gives rise to extinguishment, which is neither dark nor bright. And how does someone born into a dark class give rise to a dark result? It's when someone is reborn in a low family, a family of outcasts, bamboo workers, hunters, chariot makers, or waste collectors, poor, with little to eat or drink, where life is tough and food and shelter are hard to find, and they're ugly, unsightly, deformed, sickly, one-eyed, crippled, lame, or half-paralyzed. They don't get to have food, drink, clothes, and vehicles, garlands, fragrance, and makeup, or bed, house, and lighting. And they do bad things by way of body, speech, and mind. When their body breaks up after death, they're reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. That's how someone born into a dark class gives rise to a dark result. And how does someone born into a dark class give rise to a bright result? It's when some person is reborn in a low family, but they do good things by way of body, speech, and mind. When their body breaks up after death, they're reborn in a good place, a heavenly realm. That's how someone born into a dark class gives rise to a bright result. And how does someone born into a dark class give rise to extinguishment, which is neither dark nor bright? It's when some person is reborn in a low family, they shave off their hair and beard, dress in ochre robes, and go forth from the lay life to homelessness. They give up the five hindrances, corruptions of the heart that weaken wisdom.
They firmly establish their mind in the four kinds of mindfulness meditation. They truly develop the seven awakening factors, and then they give rise to extinguishment, which is neither dark nor bright. That's how someone born in a dark class gives rise to extinguishment, which is neither dark nor bright. And how does someone born into a bright class give rise to a dark result? It's when some person is reborn in an eminent family, a well-to-do family of aristocrats, Brahmins, or householders, rich, affluent, and wealthy, with lots of gold and silver, lots of property and assets, and lots of money and grain. And they're attractive, good-looking, lovely, of surpassing beauty. They get to have food, drink, clothes and vehicles, garlands, fragrance and makeup, and bed, house and lighting. But they do bad things by way of body, speech and mind. When their body breaks up after death, they're reborn in a place of loss, a bad place, the underworld, hell. That's how someone born into a bright class gives rise to a dark result. And how does someone born into a bright class give rise to a bright result? It's when some person is reborn in an eminent family, and they do good things by way of body, speech, and mind. When their body breaks up after death, they're reborn in a good place, a heavenly realm. That's how someone born into a bright class gives rise to a bright result. And how does someone born into a bright class give rise to extinguishment, which is neither dark nor bright? It's when some person is reborn in an eminent family. They shave off their hair and beard, dress in ochre robes, and go forth from the lay life to homelessness. They give up the five hindrances, corruptions of the heart that weaken wisdom. They firmly establish their mind in the four kinds of mindfulness meditation. They truly develop the seven awakening factors, and then they give rise to extinguishment, which is neither dark nor bright. That's how someone born into a bright class gives rise to extinguishment, which is neither dark nor bright. These are the six classes of rebirth. Defilements. Mendicants. A mendicant with six qualities is worthy of offerings dedicated to the gods, worthy of hospitality, worthy of a religious donation, worthy of veneration with joined palms, and is the supreme field of merit for the world. What six? It's a mendicant who, by restraint, has given up the defilements that should be given up by restraint. By using, they've given up the defilements that should be given up by using. By enduring, they've given up the defilements that should be given up by enduring. By avoiding, they've given up the defilements that should be given up by avoiding. By getting rid, they've given up the defilements that should be given up by getting rid. By developing, they've given up the defilements that should be given up by developing. And what are the defilements that should be given up by restraint? Take a mendicant who, reflecting rationally, lives restraining the eye faculty. For the distressing and feverish defilements that might arise in someone who lives without restraint of the eye faculty do not arise when there is such restraint. Reflecting rationally, they live restraining the ear faculty. For the distressing and feverish defilements that might arise in someone who lives without restraint of the ear faculty do not arise when there is such restraint. These are called the defilements that should be given up by restraint. Reflecting rationally, they live restraining the nose faculty. For the distressing and feverish defilements that might arise in someone who lives without restraint of the nose faculty do not arise when there is such restraint. These are called the defilements that should be given up by restraint. Reflecting rationally, they live restraining the tongue faculty. For the distressing and feverish defilements that might arise in someone who lives without restraint of the tongue faculty do not arise when there is such restraint. These are called the defilements that should be given up by restraint. Reflecting rationally, they live restraining the body faculty. For the distressing and feverish defilements that might arise in someone who lives without restraint of the body faculty do not arise when there is such restraint. These are called the defilements that should be given up by restraint. Reflecting rationally, they live restraining the mind faculty, for the distressing and feverish defilements that might arise in someone who lives without restraint of the mind faculty do not arise when there is such restraint. These are called the defilements that should be given up by restraint. And what are the defilements that should be given up by using? Take a mendicant who, reflecting rationally, makes use of robes, only for the sake of warding off cold and heat, for warding off the touch of flies, mosquitoes, wind, sun, and reptiles, and for covering up the private parts. Reflecting rationally, they make use of alms food, not for fun, indulgence, adornment, or decoration, but only to sustain this body, to avoid harm, and to support spiritual practice. In this way, I shall put an end to old discomfort and not give rise to new discomfort, and I will live blamelessly and at ease. Reflecting rationally, they make use of lodgings, only for the sake of warding off cold and heat, for warding off the touch of flies, mosquitoes, wind, sun, and reptiles, to shelter from harsh weather and to enjoy retreat. Reflecting rationally, they make use of medicines and supplies for the sick, only for the sake of warding off the pains of illness and to promote good health. For the distressing and feverish defilements that might arise in someone who lives without using these things do not arise when they are used. These are called the defilements that should be given up by using. And what are the defilements that should be given up by enduring? Take a mendicant who, reflecting rationally, endures cold, heat, hunger, and thirst. They endure the touch of flies, mosquitoes, wind, sun, and reptiles. They endure rude and unwelcome criticism, and they put up with physical pain, sharp, severe, acute, unpleasant, disagreeable, and life-threatening. For the distressing and feverish defilements that might arise in someone who lives without enduring these things do not arise when they are endured. These are called the defilements that should be given up by enduring. And what are the defilements that should be given up by avoiding? Take a mendicant who, reflecting rationally, avoids a wild elephant, a wild horse, a wild ox, a wild dog, a snake, a stump, thorny ground, a pit, a cliff, a swamp, and a sewer. Reflecting rationally, they avoid sitting on inappropriate seats, walking in inappropriate neighbourhoods, and mixing with bad friends, whatever sensible spiritual companions would believe to be a bad setting. For the distressing and feverish defilements that might arise in someone who lives without avoiding these things do not arise when they are avoided. These are called the defilements that should be given up by avoiding. And what are the defilements that should be given up by getting rid? Take a mendicant who, reflecting rationally, doesn't tolerate a sensual, malicious, or cruel thought that has arisen. They don't tolerate any bad, unskillful qualities that have arisen, but give them up, get rid of them, eliminate them, and obliterate them. For the distressing and feverish defilements that might arise in someone who lives without getting rid of these things do not arise when they are gotten rid of. These are called the defilements that should be given up by getting rid. And what are the defilements that should be given up by developing? Take a mendicant who, reflecting rationally, develops the awakening factors of mindfulness, investigation of principles, energy, rapture, tranquility, immersion, and equanimity, which rely on seclusion, fading away, and cessation, and ripen as letting go. For the distressing and feverish defilements that might arise in someone who lives without developing these things do not arise when they are developed. These are called the defilements that should be given up by developing. A mendicant with these six qualities is worthy of offerings dedicated to the gods, worthy of hospitality, worthy of a religious donation, worthy of veneration with joined palms, and is the supreme field of merit for the world. With Daru Kamika. So I have heard. At one time the Buddha was staying at Nartika in the brick house. Then the householder, Daru Kamika, went up to the Buddha, bowed and sat down to one side. The Buddha said to him, Householder, I wonder whether your family gives gifts. It does, sir. Gifts are given to those mendicants who are perfected or on the path to perfection. They live in the wilderness, eat only alms food, and wear rag robes. Householder, as a layman enjoying sensual pleasures, living at home with your children, using sandalwood imported from Kasi, wearing garlands, fragrance and makeup, and accepting golden money, it's hard for you to know who is perfected or on the path to perfection. If a mendicant living in the wilderness is restless, insolent, fickle, scurrilous, loose-tongued, unmindful, lacking situational awareness and immersion, with straying mind and undisciplined faculties, then in this respect they're reprehensible. If a mendicant living in the wilderness is not restless, insolent, fickle, scurrilous, or loose-tongued, but has established mindfulness, situational awareness, and immersion, with unified mind and restrained faculties, then in this respect they're praiseworthy. If a mendicant who lives within a village is restless, insolent, fickle, scurrilous, loose-tongued, unmindful, lacking situational awareness and immersion, with straying mind and undisciplined faculties, then in this respect they're reprehensible. If a mendicant who lives within a village is not restless, insolent, fickle, scurrilous or loose-tongued, but has established mindfulness, situational awareness and immersion, with unified mind and restrained faculties, then in this respect they're praiseworthy. If a mendicant who eats only alms food is restless, insolent, fickle, scurrilous, loose-tongued, unmindful, lacking situational awareness and immersion, with straying mind and undisciplined faculties, then in this respect they're reprehensible. If a mendicant who eats only alms food is not restless, insolent, fickle, scurrilous or loose-tongued, but has established mindfulness, situational awareness and immersion, with unified mind and restrained faculties, then in this respect they're praiseworthy. If a mendicant who accepts invitations is restless, insolent, fickle, scurrilous, loose-tongued, unmindful, lacking situational awareness and immersion, with straying mind and undisciplined faculties, then in this respect they're reprehensible. If a mendicant who accepts invitations is not restless, insolent, fickle, scurrilous or loose-tongued, but has established mindfulness, situational awareness and immersion, with unified mind and restrained faculties, then in this respect they're praiseworthy. If a mendicant who wears rag robes is restless, insolent, fickle, scurrilous, loose-tongued, unmindful, lacking situational awareness and immersion, with straying mind and undisciplined faculties, then in this respect they're reprehensible. If a mendicant who wears rag robes is not restless, insolent, fickle, scurrilous or loose-tongued, but has established mindfulness, situational awareness and immersion, with unified mind and restrained faculties, then in this respect they're praiseworthy. If a mendicant who wears robes offered by householders is restless, insolent, fickle, scurrilous, loose-tongued, unmindful, lacking situational awareness and immersion, with straying mind and undisciplined faculties, then in this respect they're reprehensible. If a mendicant who wears robes offered by householders is not restless, insolent, fickle, scurrilous or loose-tongued, but has established mindfulness, situational awareness and immersion, with unified mind and restrained faculties, then in this respect they're praiseworthy. Go ahead, householder, give gifts to the Sangha. Your mind will become bright and clear, and when your body breaks up after death, you'll be reborn in a good place, a heavenly realm. Sir, from this day forth, I will give gifts to the Sangha.